time for Taking Care of Business on Midlands 103. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Midlands 103.
Hello and welcome to the programme. David Hollywood here, deputising for Ronan Berry. Let's have a look at what's coming up. This question is for all the business owners out there. How important is your staff to you? A Midlands business has just been crowned as the best company to work for at the Irish Building and Design Awards. You'll hear from their managing director about their staff-first approach that's been reaping dividends since long before COVID forced everyone and their dog to enable working from home and so on. Speaking of achievement, we're going to be joined by one of the Westmeath students behind Cracked It. This is a brilliant business venture merging learning, nurturing and no small amount of efficiency that's already won a Westmeath Enterprise Final and will be representing the county at the Student National Enterprise Final, which takes place in Westmeath next week. The tax debt warehousing deadline is around the corner and Offaly accounting and tax expert is on hand to talk you through the details. We catch up with the MD of Global Logic Ireland to look back on the group's acquisition of Athlone's Sidero last year and the lessons learned along the way. ORS, Mullingar-based multidisciplinary building consultancy company, have been named as the best company to work for. They won the award at the Irish Building and Design Awards. I'm very glad to say John Brennan from ORS joins us. John, I know this is a particular aspect of the business that you care deeply about, so you must have been particularly gratified for ORS to be recognised in this realm.
David, hi, thanks for having me on. Yeah, we're delighted. It was the second award that we've won along the same lines of the last, so since January of this year. So the Irish Building and Design Awards, they're one of the more prestigious awards, certainly in construction. And we had a lot of tough competition in the category for other firms. Some of them in business a bit longer than us and a little bit bigger. So we were delighted to win it. It's a big credit to our team here in the office. We've a couple of teams that focus heavily on our culture and building that culture and looking after everybody. So particularly delighted for them. But yeah, it was a lovely one to win.
I know you've been on Taking Care of Business with us before talking about the workplace environment and it being important. What are the things that have been brought forward recently, be it from your perspective as a managing director or those who are delivering on the workplace culture side of things? What are you doing at the moment?
Well, nothing different than we've been doing for the last number of years. And in fact, the things that we have been doing and promoting are getting stronger and stronger. Like the thing that underpins our culture in the business more so than anything else is flexibility. And I do a lot of interviews here in ORS on a week-to-week basis, and flexibility continues to be the number one thing that everybody... remote work, it's something that, as I said, has underpinned our success here. We started looking at it back in 2015, 2016. The backstory was that some of our technicians, we had an open plan office at the time, and some of our technicians were really struggling to get their productivity up because of the distractions. So we started to look at that and started to pilot working at home, and we found that the results just got better and better. So we brought it on from there over the years. COVID came, we were already doing it, so we settled into it quite well. And the thing that really separates us from our competitors is that we don't have a remote work policy. Most companies do. I think almost all our competitors do. But for us, it's very much a case of our team decide where they work every day. Our headquarters are in Mullingar. We've got 150 people in the team. I mean, then we've 8 offices spread around. So people literally decide where they want to work. And what the fundamental, I suppose, understanding around, or the backbone for remote work, is understanding that everybody is different and everybody needs something different in their day-to-day work. So about 80% of people like having that hybrid approach, but 5% of people like working in the office all the time, but 5% of people like working at home all the time. And if you have a rigid policy that makes people come to the office 1 day a week, 2 days a week, 3 days a week, inevitably in the long term, that won't suit them. So we've left it completely informal, and that has worked very well for us. It's allowed us to keep our staff retention numbers high, and more importantly, allows us to attract a lot of talent to the business because we do it differently.
So from your perspective, from ORS's perspective, productivity is certainly, in your experience, enhanced by giving the employee that bit of agency over the environment in which they work.
Exactly, yeah. And it goes a bit deeper than that. So it's on top of giving them that choice, we also give employees a lot of help in understanding themselves. So I'm a big believer here in personal development. We have a man called Jerry Duffy, who you probably know yourself, who's been on the show a couple of times, who works with us very closely on the personal development side. So helping our team to understand themselves, understand why they enjoy the things they do, why some people like the technical aspects of the job more so than the social aspects or more so than any other aspect, why some people like working at home, why some people like doing business development, why some people like meetings and presentations, some don't. So getting people to understand all of that to enable them then to I suppose, enjoy their work as best they can and be most productive. But as I said, flexibility is the cornerstone of that. But also, I mean, the award we won a couple of weeks ago is for a lot more than that. It's also about bringing people together. So in a remote working environment or a flexible work environment, you have to continuously bring people together to continue to keep that emotional connection to the business. So as an example, last Friday was Workplace Wellbeing Day. We had a yoga session on Zoom for everybody at 10 o'clock. And then we had, at lunchtime, we had a self-care session, which helps people to deal with, you know, stresses at work or things like that. We have other events coming up. And it's not just about, you know, having fun all the time. It's also it's mainly about just bringing everybody together in a hybrid working environment and maintaining that emotional connection to the business all the time and making them feel like they belong to the business.
I find it particularly interesting. You just mentioned there, for instance, the yoga sessions, the wellness seminars. I've been in companies where these are delivered with good intentions. Whether or not they're communicated effectively might be an issue, but what was definitely an issue was staff engagement. And I suppose the starting point in terms of staff morale and all of that type of thing has to maybe be there beforehand before you can get buy-in with these. How do you find delivering something like yoga sessions over Zoom, and then how do you find your staff's interaction and engagement with it?
Yeah, quite good, because again, the business has certain core. Every business has core values, and we live by those core values here. One of the core values of our business is honoring your commitments. So we would have, when people start with us here working, you know, one of the things we always try and entice people to do is to get in the habit of honoring those commitments. So if we have a yoga session, for example, we don't say to people, everybody has to be on this. But what we do say is, if you do sign up to be on it, you know, please do your best to attend it. And if you can't attend it, then please let us know. And that's a small thing that makes a big difference. And generally, then everything is very well attended. Simple thing. But again, all going back to living those core values and linking your decisions back to those on a day-to-day basis.
Well, it's certainly won you plenty of commendations, and I can only imagine getting that recognition only helps when it comes to recruitment and retention. You mentioned retention and that ORS have a positive retention dynamic to them. Do you think it's something that sets you aside? Because if you can retain talented people, it's more than half the battle, really, because that's you develop institutional knowledge, which is of huge value then.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's a big retention and keeping people is the biggest challenge facing every business today. Like, you'll hear people, I hear people saying it in this program all the time, and it's big for us, and that's why we promote the culture so heavily. I mean, we're growing at a rapid rate. We've 150 people in the business. We plan to hire 150 more over the next 2 years. So it's very important that we keep people, and very important that we understand why people, what they need to stay. And that's where all of these initiatives come from. This is where our culture comes from. This is the basis of forming the cultural development team here in the business, and our wellness committees and our social committees. It's all about, as I keep saying, all about bringing people together, making them feel like they have an emotional connection to the business, making them feel like they belong to the business. And I feel if we can do that and continue to do that over the next while, we should be able to hit all our growth targets up to 2026.
You guys obviously have a few engineers in the building, as it were. Does it help to have solutions-minded people? I know a few engineers myself, and work that comes out of committees can sometimes bounce up against a brick wall unless you've got willing recipients. And being engineer-minded, as it were, it kind of strikes me as that could be a positive thing.
It is, but again, to go a little bit deeper than that, I mentioned some of the personal development work that we do. So we had a session here last week with one of our teams where we looked at a personal development tool called The Working Genius, which is developed by a guy in the States called Pat Lencioni. And it basically, what this tool says is that everybody, there's six different key strengths in any business that, that people have. And that everybody has two that they work with and enjoy. Everybody has two that they'll get on with. And then there's two that they don't get energy from. So when we look at forming committees, and we look at bringing people together to try and generate new ideas in the business, we look at these things and we look and see, okay, if we want someone on this committee that's tenacious and has a likes to finish things out, we need somebody that can do that. If we want somebody that has who likes generating ideas, let's put someone in there that does that. So everybody, again, back to the point of everybody understanding why they do the things that they do, why they like the things they do, and bringing those people together then, that combination actually allows us to form really strong committees that are able to come up with a lot of new ideas and then get things done in the business. So back to one of the awards, the first award I mentioned at the start is the Great Place to Work Award. Like, that's something we've done for 6 years, and it's been transformational for the company, actually. So, and it's very simple. All it is every November, all of our team fill out 50 anonymous questions on the business, mainly focused on culture. And we ask everybody to just fill that out as honestly as they can, not to be over positive or over negative, but just be as honest as they can. And then with that, we get a ranking. And then I think we've been in the top 25 for the last 5 or 6 years in Ireland, which is a great achievement in itself, and one we're very proud of. But we also ask people to give us back, as I said, the honest feedback. And from that, we get some terrific ideas about how to change the business. And again, I've said this in this program before, is most of the things that we do in the business, most of the ideas, they're not coming from management. They're coming from all levels of the business, up and down. So we're very grateful for that. It's worked very well for us. Hopefully that'll continue over the next couple of years.
We're nearly at the end of our conversation, John. I just firstly wanted to ask you, what about the inverse of what you're talking about? You're giving employees agency and maybe letting them zero in on their strengths. Is there a culture there of pushing people to go out of their comfort zone as well? How do you balance those?
Yeah, I suppose there is. I mean, it's a business, as long as I've been in the business, that's always been the way it is. You know, we've always pushed people to get out of the comfort zone. But also, yeah, I mean, we would always encourage people to be very open with us about what they're not comfortable with. So, there's something we've been looking at a lot lately. I mentioned the psychological contract earlier on. Psychological safety is a term that you hear coming up in business a lot over the last couple of years. And this is where, you know, someone can sit down with their manager on a regular basis and have a chat around where they are, the things they're doing that they enjoy, the things that they don't enjoy. I've been actually able to say that and being in a space it's comfortable enough for them to challenge their manager and for there not to be a negative that comes out of that. So we encourage that an awful lot and try to ensure that people are comfortable to tell us when they want to push back on something or they don't want to do something. And I have to say that's worked quite well.
Okay, a final question then. From your own perspective in ORS, is there anything in the calendar over the course of the next number of weeks or months that has you particularly excited?
We've lots on. We've I don't know if I mentioned earlier, but over the last couple of years, we got some investment in at the end of 2022, and we've acquired three businesses over the course of last year, which has been, which is really helping our growth targets, but also just increases the number of services that we can provide. But we've just gone into due diligence with a fourth business, and we hope to close that in June. So very excited about those guys joining us. So lots of different, more award ceremonies coming up. Actually, we're in the Irish Construction Ice Awards, actually, at the end of May, where one of our projects, Mercy Secondary School in Kilbeggan, actually one of our projects has been nominated there. So we're really excited about that. That's just a couple of examples. But, lots to look forward to, as there is every year in a growing business.
Repeatedly and objectively highlighted as a great place to work, ORS in Mullingar. John, really appreciate you taking the time. John Brennan, Managing Director there. Thanks again.
Thanks, David.
Next up, you'll meet a remarkable young man with a sharp business mind who's bringing ingenuity and education to the world of enterprise.
Taking care of business. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Next on Taking Care of Business, we are going to profile a young, enterprising individual, part of a young enterprising team who are bringing their business Hatchet out to the Student Enterprise National Finals, representing Westmeath. I love this idea, and I'm delighted to be able to welcome John Glennon to the Midlands 103 studio to chat about this final coming up and the whole idea of Hatchet Out. So, John, you're very welcome. Thanks for coming in to us. Tell us, what is Hatchet Out?
Yeah, thanks for having me. So the Hatchet Out programme is a 5-week long project for schools all across Ireland. So what the project is the project we bring an incubator and 20 eggs to a school, and over a 35-day period the kids will get to watch a simple egg develop and grow inside the school and the hatch out. So on day one we arrive with 20 eggs and an incubator, and I set the settings and put all the eggs into the incubator. I put the incubator turning the eggs every single hour for the next 21 days. I then show the children and explain the incubator and answer any questions they might have. I will leave then and return on day 10 to candle the eggs. So what that is, it's a process where I shine a torch to the eggs and then able to see the embryo and the veins all across the egg.
Wow.
Yeah, and then able to show the egg to the children, and they get to see the how the egg's developed and how good a job they are doing at minding it.
That's, I'd say they must love that. Now, first important thing to mention is your school, St Finian's College, is who you're representing. It's not just you on the team. Who else is involved?
Yeah, there's four of us. So me, myself, John Glennon, Brian Gildillan, Ethan Mezanov and Jamie Gaffney.
So congratulations to all of you for getting this far so far. So let's get back into the process of what Hatchet Out is. There's a process where after 10 days, you turn up, and by shining a torch through the shell, it's somewhat transparent. So the kids can really see the beginnings of life within that eggshell.
Yeah, they're able to see the veins and the embryo developing inside the egg. Because on day one, I'll be able to show them how it's just pure see-through. There's nothing inside the egg.
Mm.
And then when I return on day 10, they'll be able to see the veins and the embryo developing. So it's very interesting.
How did they react to that?
Yeah, they love it. And then they all think they're doing a great job. Mine is, so it's great to see.
That's class.
Yeah,
what happens after the 10th day then for the rest of it?
Yeah, so I leave then again at day 10 and I return on day 21 with the equipment like the container, feeder, drinker and heat plate for the next 2 weeks, because after they hatch the chicks get to go into that container and the children get to keep them for another 2 weeks. So I return on day 21 and check up on the eggs and see if the chicks are hatching. I'll show then the staff and children how to transfer the chicks from the incubator into the container, and then they'll do the rest from there. So they love to see it. On day 21 it's just pure joy and excitement around, it's unreal.
That's great stuff. You've already won the county championship of this version of this enterprise competition. Tell us, why did you end up doing this? Like, where did it all start?
Yeah, so it all started, I myself started selling chicks and eggs on Dundeel back in lockdown just to keep me busy. So I always was interested in doing enterprise. So then when I was talking to my sister one day, and she was always me hatching out the chicks, she thought it was really interesting. And she kind of suggested to me she wanted to try it out in her school. And so I did it in her school with my own incubator, and it was a huge success. The children loved it. So then when that happened, I just bit the bullet and bought a heap of equipment and heat plates and containers and incubators, and just haven't looked back since. I've been to loads of school in Dublin, Westmeath, Kildare, Offaly and Westmeath. So it's went very well so far.
Tell us about the process as you experience it, because it sounds like it's something that, regardless of the younger kids who are amazed at what goes on, is there something in the way you handle the eggs and the incubation period and hatching that you enjoy? It seems like something you gravitated towards.
Yeah, I was always really interested, and I always find it very fun to watch, and just to see how a simple egg just develops and grows. I was always really fascinated by it and always interested in that.
Yeah, and something that applies to so much of the biological world as well.
Exactly, yeah.
This process. From a business perspective then, how is it, as it is currently comprised, considering the outgoings and the cost for a school to bring you guys in, is it sustainable economically from your perspective?
Yeah, okay. It's very sustainable, yeah.
Good. So once you kind of have that major outlay of the gear at the start, that's the main cost.
That's the main cost, yeah. Yeah, because we get to reuse all the equipment, so just after we buy the equipment at first, it's just all reused and reused. And so there's that the initial price is just more or less it.
Okay. And then was it that your school, St. Finian's, encouraged you and a team to enter into the this enterprise competition in Westmeath or what?
Yeah, so St. Finian's College, my school, have been great support. Yeah, they've been supporting us the whole way, and my enterprise teacher has been great the whole way. They've encouraged us the whole way into it. And so my enterprise teacher got us into the Westmeaths, and it went great. As you can see, like, we got through, so it went great there.
It says here there's about 1,000 students who took part in the competition, or maybe that's nationwide. How many, was there a fair few students at the Westmeath final?
Yes, there was a lot. Yeah, there could have been, I don't know completely now, but
You weren't counting them, to be fair to you.
I wasn't counting them, no, I was too busy, yeah. Yeah, but there was loads, yeah, it was packed.
Okay, good stuff. I'd say there was a bit of excitement then. What was it like when you heard you had won?
It was great. I didn't even think at the time that we had a chance, and it was just phenomenal when we won. Like, we were just shocked, and just haven't looked back since. It's been great. Like,
you're off to a national final next week. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I just can't wait. It's going to be really exciting now. It'll be great. Like, it'll be a great experience even to see all the other businesses and what the other students came up with. Good to see like different angles and see what other people thought of doing business and everything.
Well, there must be. You must have already seen at the Westmeath final like some interesting ideas, and I imagine if you have your eyes peeled and your ears open, you could probably pick up a few handy tips along the way.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, even out there, we were talking to different teams and stuff, and everybody had different experiences. And everybody loved doing it, and there was loads of different really interesting ideas. They're all really different, sustainable and environmentally friendly ideas, yeah.
Mullingar Park Hotel. The national final, it's next week, next Thursday, the 9th of May.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Okay, good stuff. Well, we wish you the very best for it. Going forward, do you think it's something that you'll be carrying on into the future?
Yeah, definitely, 100%. Yeah, now that we've made it this far, 100% we'll keep going.
Well, yeah, I know you're a committed farmer, and you're leaving the studio to go straight back to the farm for a bit of work now.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Good stuff. Cows need milking.
Cows need milking is right, yeah.
All right. John Glennon from St. Finian's College, a massive congratulations on winning the Westmeath final, and the very best of luck in the Student Enterprise National Finals in Mullingar next week.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you.
One of the many legacies, good and bad, I guess, of the pandemic was that of tax debt warehousing. The deadline to reach out to revenue on this is just around the corner. We break down the details next.
Taking care of business. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
John McCann of MCM Accounting in Tullamore joins us now to look at the tax debt warehousing deadline. Let's start off, John, by defining what we're talking about.
So people understand, what is debt warehousing? Well, debt warehousing was essentially a scheme whereby revenue allowed certain companies during the COVID period to defer paying certain taxes. Now, what were those taxes? Well, first of all, those taxes generally centred from around 2021 and 2022. And they would refer to PAYE, they would refer to VAT, and on very occasional circumstances, some income tax. So essentially, they were business taxes. And the concept there was, look, we're going through COVID, put them to one side, will you just keep your current taxes up to date and we'll come back and we'll deal with this. And essentially they gave us certain periods on which you could pay this tax, this money back. And they set about, there was three specific periods, but as it happens, the way things worked out, they all kind of seemed to roam into one another. And eventually revenue have said, look, lads, on the May, and to keep it very simple, on the 1st of May 2024, we need you to pay your taxes. It's as simple as that. There's a specific means of doing that. It means you go into the revenue system, you set up a repayment arrangement, or alternatively pay all your taxes. And if you want a repayment arrangement, we will give you an interest-free loan, effectively. And it's going up to maybe 60 months, which is basically 6 years, and it's on an interest-free basis. So in many ways, it's actually very generous. But, and this is the but, there are conditions. And one of the conditions are you will have to have kept your taxes from 2023 onwards up to date filed when they were due and paid when they were due. And if you didn't, it means that you can't avail of this debt warehousing. It's as simple as that. The other thing is that you would have to keep your, if you're a company, you would probably have to keep your, the directors would have to keep their personal taxes up to date. So once you do that, and once you put in what they call the phase payment application, and that's just a very fancy term for a kind of a loan through the Revenue online system, Revenue will allow you a certain period to pay back these taxes. And it's as simple as that, David, you know?
Okay, and worth pointing out and underlining as well that if you miss the deadline and you don't engage with Revenue, you're then exposed to much more significant interest rates.
I suppose there's two ways of looking at this. There's two views. One is you'd be absolutely out of your mind not to avail of this opportunity or facility that Revenue have afforded, because, you know, they haven't specified that there's a limit. They will certainly review on very high levels. But if a number of companies have, let's say, 50,000, you will be given 5 years to pay that back. And that's very generous on an interest-free basis. And given that current interest rates, just borrowing from a banker would be around kind of 7, 8, maybe 9%, and Revenue's rate of interest is normally 9. It's normally between 8 and 10%. It's very generous. Now, so the first point is you'd be very foolish not to do it. You'd be even more foolish to ignore it, because what's going to happen is Revenue looking at this at the moment, David, there is 1.65 billion out. That's the sort of money that is actually owed to Revenue during this period, and it centres around the main groups that actually owe this money are retail/wholesale, there's the hospitality industry, and there's construction. Now, it's reasonable to say that in certain sectors, businesses are doing well, but it's also fair to say that there are other businesses not doing so well. And Revenue really are now under a lot of political pressure as well as tactical pressure to say, look, we've given you every opportunity. We've afforded you a fantastic facility here. If you decide to ignore it, well, I'm sorry, we have to get in here and we have to get our money. And that means we may have to close down businesses. We will certainly send the sheriff in. We will engage in enforcement. And that will automatically involve all sorts of very, very unpleasant scenarios for business.
Okay, so yeah, it is clear cut in terms of the benefit of engaging with Revenue, regardless of your situation. The 1.65 billion you mentioned, that's outstanding. I've read that it has been paid down by 1.5 billion since January 22. So things had been moving in the right direction. But at this point, Revenue have decided, as you hinted at there, maybe be it through pressure and their own motivation, they are looking to get rid of this other 1.65 billion a lot quicker than the previous. Would you imagine that this deadline will bring a lot of that money back to Revenue?
Okay. This is spread over about 55,000 companies or businesses. So my guess is that if anybody had any sense and watched what was going on, they would certainly be probably savvy enough to avail of this interest-free money. So it is certainly my belief there is a huge block of money that is going to be repaid. But I also believe there is going to be an extremely large block of money that's not going to be paid and that could never have been paid and never will be paid. And I think really what Revenue are saying is, look, there's no point in carrying this money on our books. We're either going to get it paid. And in fairness, they're even saying, look, if we need a longer period for a business that's really sustainable, we'll give that. But they're also going to take the view, look, if the business is not sustainable and you can't keep your current taxes up to date, it's just, we just close down the business, and that's essentially what's going to happen. So in answer to your question, yes, I think there's going to be a lump of money going to come in, and I think it's going to come in a very structured fashion. And then there's just going to be a lump where it's just not going to happen.
Do you think we'll be seeing a lot of headlines then about local businesses closing down and that type of thing in the near future?
Well, David, we all love a bit of doom and gloom. We do love to have an old give out and a give out about the government. And most certainly I have exercised my own views in certain things that the government have done over various budgetary, in particularly the hospitality, the increasing of the minimum wage and the various bits and pieces in a very, very fast manner. And also then putting out, we're going to have this pension auto enrollment in October time. So it's a lot of stuff coming in on top of small businesses. And for this to be coming in, I think will certainly break the back of a number of businesses. But I would also say there's probably a number of those businesses that probably are just not going to survive anyway, and we're never going to survive.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose that's the other side of that coin. Let's just go back to how we ended up in this situation. Now that we've got a bit of clearance from the pandemic, a bit of retrospect can kick in about the decisions that were made. Do you think that ultimately the supports that were offered out to local businesses and small and medium enterprises to maintain them, be it tourism, hospitality, retail, or the bigger ones like construction, now that we look at the situation in relation to the tax debt warehousing and closures or otherwise, what was the right decisions made along the way, do you think, from a financial perspective?
Okay, I think in fairness to the government, and I say I'm the first proponent to give them a good old kick up the you know where when I think so. I think they did behave. They behaved in a very responsible manner. They for once in their lives actually took the view that businesses needed support, and they supported businesses very well through the EWSS, that's the wage scheme, the TWSS, which I think was very badly structured, but nonetheless it was a good support. There were a number of grants, rates waivers, etc., and then there was the CRSS, which was to allow certainly the hospitality sector continue on, although they were being forced to be closed. So yes, all very good decisions were made there. And remember, any profits that were made on any of these businesses have been paid back through either income tax or corporation tax. But, and this is one of the big buts that I have consistently had an issue about, they should not have actually issued this money without deducting tax along the way. So if you look at, let's say, something like construction tax, this is a situation where a person's or a company's tax position isn't that strong for whatever reason. Revenue will insist that a certain amount is deducted by a construction payment to a subcontractor of, let's say, 20%, 30%, or whatever the figure is. So my suggestion would have been at that time, they should have made tax deductions on these grants, so that that will be set aside to deal with the tax issue at a later stage, because there's no point in giving money if you can't pay your taxes. It's as simple as that. I do understand that if you are losing money, it makes it more difficult, but you can't use taxes to fund your business. As simple as that. And I would say that was a major mistake they made. But however, it's very easy for us to sit back in retrospect.
It is, of course. And ultimately, you'd have to think that a great many businesses were saved with the interventions that were put in place, and this tax debt warehousing deadline of May 1st, that is, as we go into Wednesday tomorrow, is another sign of us moving on from what was a remarkable and unforgettable, for all the wrong reasons, kind of time. Anyway, John, you've been great with your time. Much appreciate you talking us through that from MCM Accounting in Tullamore, John McCann. Thanks again.
Thanks, David.
It was big news last year when the Athlone-based Sidero was picked up in an acquisition deal by Global Logic. You're about to find out how life in the Westmeath engineering and software development company has been since.
Taking care of business. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Last year, there was a big announcement to come from the Midlands business scene, and that was that the Athlone-based Sidero was being acquired by Global Logic, which is well known as a Hitachi Group company. We are now just a few weeks past the start of the new financial year. I'm very glad to say that the Managing Director of Global Logic Ireland, the former CEO of Sidero, Carmel Owens, joins us on Taking Care of Business this evening. Carmel, thanks so much for taking our call.
Thanks, David, and thanks for having me on.
Not at all. So Sidero, people would have known it as an engineering services and kind of a cloud-based software development company. The acquisition and the merging of the two entities, Global Logic and Sidero, is well and truly, I'd say, kind of done at this point. So just from the practical process of it all coming together over the last number of months since it was announced last year, how has that gone?
Well, pretty smoothly, actually. You know, there's a bit of a change. We've gone from being a company of about 250 people to being one of 30,000 in GlobalLogic. So, you know, we're a small fish in a big pond now, I suppose. But it's we've been very well supported throughout it. So there's been, you know, sort of systems and technology, IT, all that had to integrate. And of course, people had to fit into the new organization, which I guess gives opportunity for lots of people. Our customers in general are very pleased as well. There's a lot more capability. So I think it's a good news story all around, and so far so good.
Okay, good stuff. You mentioned something that's interesting there, actually, is the effect on the people within the company. And when new roles pop up and different avenues are created and so on, and as you said, the workforce, they go from being part of a 250-person company to that of a 30,000. That must actually inject a bit of energy into everybody and change the dynamic within the building.
Yeah, it totally does. You know, we've colleagues from all around the world. We went to see, for example, an Irish customer yesterday, and we had people on from India, from Ukraine, from our London office, and then there were a few of us in the room from the Athlone office. So there's great diversity there. And, you know, for our team in Ireland, of course, there's a lot more opportunity as well, potentially, you know, if they want to move, travel, you know, look for promotion. So that there's a lot of opportunity, I think, in general.
From GlobalLogic's perspective, what do you think? Talk us through what your reading was of their rationale in looking at Sidero, and how do you think they'll be feeling about their acquisition at this point?
Well, GlobalLogic is a design-led engineering company, digital services company. And why they liked Sidero so much was because of our deep technical expertise. We were particularly strong in the telecom space, so that was important to them. So we brought that, but also it's part of their commitment to growth in Europe and growth in Ireland. So there were a number of different reasons why they bought us. And I think, you know, it's not been the easiest time in the technology sector. That's no secret. But I'd say overall that they're very pleased with how things are going. We're working very well with the global teams. And, you know, the Athlone team are very much seen as being the leaders in particular technology spaces and areas. Say telecom's been one of them. So that's great to see.
And you mentioned there, of course, that the technology sector in this country and globally has gone through a choppy period. So for those working in Athlone, there must be a sense of security developed by being part of this acquisition. And as you say there, actually being a lead body in and around where software engineers and cloud experts are required.
Yeah, I think, look, it's great to be part of such a big, strong organisation. And then ultimately the owner of GlobalLogic is Hitachi, which, you know, they're huge again. So, I think for all of us, it represents security, as you say, but also great opportunity. And great opportunity, I think, for us in Ireland to expand the footprint, expand our presence. 15 of the top 50 GlobalLogic customers have European headquarters in Ireland. So we have the opportunity to work with them. So that's really positive too.
I presume, Carmel, you would have grown up in this country when, before all this was a reality, before Ireland was this internationally regarded technology hub. It's been a remarkable transformation over the last few decades to be in the position we are now, both in the Midlands and in the urban centres around the country.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I went to DCU, I studied computer applications, and almost all of my class emigrated. And I won't tell you when that was, but it wasn't today or yesterday. And that was the norm. While it has been a difficult time, there's no doubt about it. It's hard to believe that we, you know, that things have gone so well over, say, the last 20 odd years or so.
What about yourself personally? And by that I mean the working rhythm that you had as the CEO of Sidero, Managing Director of Global Logic Ireland. Is there much extra to the brief on a daily basis? Does the rhythm of your work change over the last few months?
Well, there's a lot more reporting upwards, as you'd expect, you know, and there's a lot more, I suppose, focus on us because, you know, we're the new kids on the block. Our headquarters are in Santa Clara, so there are calls later on in the day, but actually our American colleagues are very respectful generally. So, you know, it hasn't changed that much. It's busier, there's no doubt, and there's more travel involved. But that's, you know, again, look, it's an opportunity, I think, and it's great to be able to represent the Irish team.
What's the headcount in terms of employees? I know you've got the base in Athlone. There's one in Newry as well.
There is, yeah. We're over 200 now, exactly about 210 employees at this stage.
Okay.
And then, you know, there's a substantial group then of Hitachi employees as well in Ireland.
And from the Global Logic Ireland perspective, have you guys got medium-term plans in place or long-term ambitions in place for expansion and development, generally speaking?
Yeah, we sure do. I mean, if you consider that 15 of the top 50 Global Logic customers have a presence in Ireland, you know, really, I suppose my challenge, if you like, is to see how do we grow the Irish business and the Irish team here and go into those customers. So that's very much our focus.
So as I said at the top of our chat, you're now at a point where everything's been formalised. You've got a working model after the acquisition. A final question then is, as you reflect on the last number of months, I imagine regardless of how smoothly things are going, there's anxiety that comes with the unknown. How have you found the process? Have you all landed where you'd hoped?
Yeah, it is difficult and nobody likes uncertainty. You know, we found that you can't over communicate to everyone, and maybe sometimes we were guilty of not communicating enough. But I would say that, you know, that's in the rear view mirror now. And I think we're all very pleased with where we are. We start our new financial year there on the 1st of April. So very positive for the year ahead for both our brilliant employees in Ireland and also our customers.
Well, you've been great with your time. Thanks for joining us on Taking Care of Business this evening.
Okay, thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks to Carmel again for joining us on Taking Care of Business. Our final piece comes to you from Mullingar Chamber. Now, tis the season. What season, I hear you ask? It's the season of golf classics, often organised by the business chambers across the region of the Midlands. The Mullingar Chamber of Commerce has announced the return of their annual golfing event, which is the Mullingar Chamber Garda Cup Classic. It is taking place on Friday, the 24th of May. Daniel Boyne from Mullingar Chamber joins us to look forward to it. Daniel, thanks very much for taking our call.
No problem, David. How are you?
Grant, thanks. Look, this event comes with a reputation for being really well organised, really well received. People who tend to participate tend to enjoy it.
Yeah, they do indeed. Look, it's a really great day out. The event's been held for over 30 years and look, it marks the continued relationship we have here at the Chamber with the local on Garda Síochána, because it is the Garda Cup Classic. So yeah, it's a fantastic day for members to kind of get out onto the lovely golf course out there in Mullingar and network with each other and, of course, some friendly competition.
Yeah, exactly. A nice, a healthy dose of competition and networking. An ideal situation for many people. Talk to us about actually what's being laid out, what's happening on the day itself.
Well, it's pretty much like last year, like last year's golf event. So basically it kicks off 2 o'clock and it's a shotgun start. So all the team can start together. And they play for a few hours out on the Mullingar golf course. It's usually 25 teams of four we have this year. And they play for a couple of hours. And then after they come in for a nice little meal in the restaurant out on the golf course, followed by a presentation for the awards by Alison English, our president.
Okay, good stuff. And in terms of entries, there's still a capacity there if anyone wants to get involved, is there?
Now, it is filling up quite quickly. So, yeah, it is. It's €400 for a team of four. And of course, we do have tea sponsorship available at the moment for €100 per tea. So there is some slots available. So yeah, definitely contact us here in the office and contact me, Daniel, to info@mullingarchamber.ie, and I'd be happy to add to the list.
That is Taking Care of Business for another week. Joe Cooney is waiting in the wings with Country Roads. I'll talk to you soon.
Taking Care of Business returns next Tuesday at 7 p.m. with the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.